Chapter 14. Pale Yellow Orbs That Rule the Night. I am so pleased that you extended the invitation to include the Wizards of Longsaddle, Penelope Harple said to Catti Bree. The two worked in an open tent near the reconstruction of the trunk of the host tower of the Arcane. Dwarves bustled all around, bringing in chunks of the fallen tower, cataloging them and bringing them to another huge tent where the puzzle was being placed back together. Fortunately, thus far at least, it seemed as if the parts nearer the place of destruction were the lower pieces of the tower. Your input here, as in Gontalgrim, has helped so much and given me strength, Catti Bree replied. She paused then and looked out at the hustle off to the side, where some dwarves were arguing, hands on hips, with Lady Avalier. Yes, Catti Bree thought. Penelope's presence did lend her strength, as did the person of Lady Avalier. Despite their unorthodox, unbalanced relationship, Catti Bree couldn't deny her affection for the sorcerer. Avalier looked truly flustered as the dwarves bounced and waved and pointed all around her. She glanced at Catti Bree and Penelope, who was now also watching, and gave a helpless sigh and shrug. The two women shared a laugh at that. Her work has been tremendous, Penelope remarked, turning back to the maps of the north, Luskan to Neverwinter, they had spread upon the table. They had drawn the location of Gontalgrim on one copy, and Catti Bree had traced in lines to represent the tendrils of the host tower that carried the water and the elemental power to the primordial pit. Your insight seems plausible, Penelope admitted, nodding. Catti Bree had raised the possibility that they could detect those underground tendrils by following the lines of forest between the two locations. Particularly the willows. Is there anything in all the world that chases water more determinedly than a willow? As determinedly as a dragon chases gold, Catti Bree replied. Or a dwarf chases ale, Penelope added with a smile. Or Penelope chases men, Catti Bree remarked, stealing the mirth for a moment at least, as Penelope looked up at her curiously. I mean no offense. You have found a unique manner of proving that. Am I wrong about you and Wulfgar? Does it bother you? Penelope asked. No, Catti Bree replied. Truly no, I apologize. Let us pretend that I never made the remark. Like an elf chases stars, I should have said that. Why? Catti Bree looked at her closely. Why then? Penelope reiterated. I do believe that you meant no offense, and so I take none. But your words were no slip of the tongue. They came from somewhere, yes? Curiosity, Catti Bree admitted. You already know of the tryst between me and Wulfgar. And he wasn't the first. The first? Penelope laughed. Oh, by the gods, no. Even though you are married. Oh, Penelope said, catching on. Yes, well, my marriage is a different arrangement than you have perhaps encountered before. There is nothing deceptive about my adventures, however I choose to find and enjoy them. And Dowl? Catti Bree asked, referring to her husband, a most gracious man and friend to Catti Bree in the years she had spent at the Ivy Mansion. His life is exciting too, I assure you. Then what about love? Catti Bree appreciated the sincerity and the sympathetic, but surely not superior look Penelope offered. I choose to separate the adventure of new relationships and the deep and abiding love I share with Dowl. The Harple explained. I will live once. My healthy years of adulthood will span perhaps 50, perhaps longer if I am careful. Or if an enemy does not kill me, or if I can find some magic to extend my time. There is such magic. Would you use it? Of course. Many would not, Catti Bree said. And it was certainly true enough. Potions of longevity and the like were not nearly as commonplace as Penelope's attitude would indicate, nor were spells of resurrection. Many expect a better existence beyond this life we know. There is, Caterbury replied with some certainty. "And I do not diminish or doubt your beliefs," said Penelope. "For me, this is what I know, and I choose to enjoy it in every way I can. I find joy in meeting new people and in exploring more deeply with those I meet and come to like." "With the men, you mean?" Penelope shrugged and grinned, letting Caterbury know that perhaps that didn't matter quite as much as she supposed. "For carnal pleasures," Caterbury clarified. Penelope shrugged. "Sometimes. As with Wolfgar. They are called pleasures for a reason, my friend." Caterbury started to respond, but Penelope cut her short with an upraised hand. "Perhaps now I should be taking offense?" she asked. "Or is your obvious frustration with me now an honest inquisition or, as it seems, a judgment?" "No," Caterbury stammered at a loss. She had lived into her 40s in her previous life, and now again for more than 2 decades. She had faced mighty enemies, dragons and demons even, and had fought as a proxy for Mialiki in a great struggle with the goddess Loth. She had passed through death. She had been afforded the insights of divine beings. How could this uneasiness that had come over her be placing her into such a spot of judgment and emotional distress? "I do try not to judge," she explained, after taking a deep breath to center herself. "I am simply trying to understand." She paused as movement to the side caught her attention and drew her eye to Archmage Gromph, who was crossing by Lady Avalier and the dwarves. She couldn't help but note the haughty dark elf seeming so far above their petty quibbling, or at least her initial reaction began that way, though it soon shifted to her insight that, yes, indeed, Gromph did appear so far above that pettiness, seeming so much above those other mere mortals, seeming to her almost godlike. Many heartbeats passed by unnoticed to Caterbury. Gromph turned and flashed her a smile, and his amber eyes would not let her go. "He is attractive, isn't he?" Penelope asked, the woman's voice jarring her from her near trance. "And powerful." There was no denying the admiration in Penelope's tone, and for a moment it occurred to Caterbury that Penelope might wish to lie with Gromph. And for a moment, Caterbury wanted to slap her. "So amazingly proficient with the art," Penelope continued. "It is hard not to be taken with him." It took a few moments for that last remark to truly sink in, but when it did, it shook Caterbury, and she snapped her head around to view Penelope. Penelope wasn't looking at Gromph as she had expected, but at Caterbury, and with a knowing grin. "He was the Archmage of Menzo Baranzon," Caterbury blurted, "serving Lulf and the vile matron mothers." "Yes, dangerous," Penelope said, never blinking. And Caterbury got the distinct feeling that the woman was mocking her. Despite that, Caterbury found herself staring at Gromph once more, and in her thoughts, she imagined herself amorously entwined with the Archmage. She tried to shake that vision away, but it held on stubbornly, and when she managed to turn her eyes outward, there was Gromph, smiling at her from afar. "It is hard not to be taken with him," Penelope Harpal said again. "I am not," Caterbury protested, never turning around. "He is evil. Who knows how many innocents have fallen to his evocations?" "Are you telling me, or yourself?" Penelope asked. Now Caterbury did spin back again on Penelope, though in no small part because Gromph turned away and walked farther from her, his eyes going to something else. She stared hard at the Harpal woman, trying to find some stinging retort. She wanted to lash out, but as she realized that truth, she turned it inward. Penelope's words had struck her because she was having a hard time denying them. "There is nothing wrong with wondering," the woman told her. "Or with acting out on that wonder, if I were like you," Caterbury replied, and she wanted to retract the words as soon as she uttered them. Penelope shrugged. If she took offense, she didn't show it. "If that is your way," she answered. With a smile and a wink, Penelope shifted her gaze past Catti Bree and over to the distant Gromph. "I would spend a long 10-day with him," she said, "as long as we had enough food." Catti Bree felt herself blushing. "Life is an adventure," Penelope said. "A beautiful adventure." Gromph watched the two women retreat from the open tent, the Harple wizard moving to join Lady Avalier, and Catti Bree heading for the bridge to Close Guard Isle. She'd cross, almost certainly, and then on to the mainland to replace her maps and search for others in the repository Bregendiereth had set up to hold the scrolls and tomes found in Illusk and elsewhere. Gromph's stare followed the intriguing woman across that first bridge, and all the way past the tower of High Captain Kurth, who, coincidentally, was even then approaching Gromph from the other direction. "Well met, Archmage," Beniago said, still in his respectful bow when Gromph turned to regard him. "You look ridiculous," Gromph replied, shaking his head in open disgust at the Beenri Drow's human facade with that flaming red hair. "It is a useful tool, nothing more." "You are a Beenri," Gromph scolded. "At what point does the embarrassment of your disguise outweigh the small utility it provides?" "When Jarlaxle tells me so, I expect." The reminder of Beniago's true allegiance drew a slight grimace from Gromph, but the point was well made. "What use is it at this point in any case?" Gromph asked. "Most of the city knows the truth of House Kurth, and knows that the Drow are in control. There is nothing they can do about it, and likely nothing they would want to do about it. We are as much their armor as their potential enemies." Beniago shrugged, somewhat dismissively. "Perhaps the deception is to deter eyes outside the city of Sails. Waterdavian lords, Drow matron mothers." "Tiago knew the truth of you, as did the Zorlarans," Gromph said. "And so too, matron mother Beenri. Who then are you deceiving, other than yourself?" "You would have to ask Jarlaxle," said Beniago. "Your loyalty is commendable, I suppose." "It was earned many times over, and all in Bregendiereth would agree, Archmage. Jarlaxle need not rule with threats, but merely by asking. All in Bregendiereth would fight for him and die for him." Gromph looked very carefully at the drow in human disguise, recognizing that there was a message there beyond the words, a not-so-subtle warning, perhaps. "She is beautiful, is she not?" Beniago asked unexpectedly, gesturing with his chin in the direction of Close Guard Isle. "For a human woman, I mean." Gromph glanced back, then back at Beniago, his expression caught halfway between confusion and an incredulous grin. "The wife of Drizzt," Beniago clarified, his reference to the rogue Doerden making much more than the woman's identity clear in Gromph's mind. "And Jarlaxle would not take kindly were I to bed her, is that your point?" Gromph asked bluntly. Beniago put on an innocent aspect, even held up his hands as if at a loss. But Gromph knew better, and he laughed aloud then, amused that he was being threatened by such a creature as this pitiful, red-haired human impostor standing in front of him. "Jarlaxle will take as I demand, whatever I may give to him," Gromph replied too calmly. "Ah, yes, the wife of Drizzt. I hadn't thought of pretty Catti Bree in those terms before, but bedding an Iblith? Absurd. That is the stuff of Jarlaxle, whose tastes allow for—" He paused and laughed again, gesturing to indicate Beniago, and more pointedly, Beniago's disguise as he finished with a derisive snort. "This. There is much to Jarlaxle's world that you do not understand," Beniago warned. "And since this is now your world as well, perhaps you should. And perhaps you would be wise to beware your indiscipline." Beniago bowed again. "I only wish to inform, Archmage." "Yes, of course," said Gromph. And he looked back to Close Guard Isle and beyond, and began stroking his chin and making small humming sounds, as if considering something. "Catti Bree," he said. "Pretty Catti Bree." He turned back to Beniago, his face now bright. "I had not thought of her in those terms, High Captain, but now perhaps I shall. Perhaps it will be worth my time to bed her, just to witness Jarlaxle's reaction." "And Drizzt?" Ben Iago managed to say, and his wince gave Gromp great pleasure, confirming that he had put the fool on his heels. "Who?" Gromp said with a snicker, and walked away.
"I was teasing you, and I should not have,"
Penelope Harple said to Catti Bree later that night, the two alone sitting on the edge of the bed in Catti Bree's tent, with Penelope brushing Catti Bree's thick auburn hair.
"Your emotions were honest, and in sharing them you trusted me with something beyond such childish—"
"I gave you reason," Catti Bree interrupted. "I should not have judged you. I simply do not understand."
"Perhaps you place a higher value on such acts than I," said Penelope.
Catti Bree grabbed the brush so she wouldn't get scratched by it as she turned to stare earnestly at the woman.
"You diminish yourself?" she asked.
"Oh, no," Penelope clarified.
"It is not a contest. I place no value on placing such a value, if you get my meaning."
"So you mock me my morals?"
"Of course not.
You claim that I place great value upon it and then dismiss that value as useless."
"I do not," Penelope declared in no uncertain terms.
"It is your way, and I respect that."
"How can you, if to you the act of lovemaking is so trite?"
"I never said that. It is surely implied."
Penelope sat back and nodded, staring openly at Catti Bree all the while, as if she was honestly trying to understand, or perhaps to explain herself better.
"Is it the act itself on which you place the value?"
"I value it."
"If you were not with Drizzt, would you be celibate?"
Catti Bree started to respond, but cut herself short and sat back, her expression perplexed. Penelope had caught her off guard.
"If I were not in love," she said tentatively.
"But you could be in love with another."
"I cannot imagine that."
"Did you not once love Wolfgar?"
Catti Bree sucked in her breath. Penelope had hit a nerve. Once she had thought herself in love with Wolfgar indeed, and he was the only other man she had ever lain with in both her lives.
"I thought I was," she started to say, but Penelope held up her hand to stop her from elaborating.
"Wolfgar was in love with you," Penelope said.
"Of that I have no doubt."
"Do you regret?"
"Yes,"
Catti Bree blurted, then,
"No," followed by a helpless shrug.
"It is not the act itself for you, I think," Penelope said.
"Nor for many, I am sure. It is rather the honesty and the integrity. There is no deeper secret a person might hold than those moments, and so perhaps it should only be given, by man or by woman, in great trust."
"And how many do you trust?"
Catti Bree asked, rather sharply.
"If I place less value on the act of love than you do, it is not out of a lack of self-respect, my friend,"
Penelope answered, trying hard, and mostly successfully, to keep her own budding anger out of the response.
"Nay, value is the wrong word, I fear. I should not have brought that word into this conversation."
She could see that she had Catti Bree's attention then, the woman's guard still up, obviously. But in Catti Bree's eyes, Penelope saw curiosity, and Penelope got the feeling that this entire conversation was striking in Catti Bree's sensibilities more than it should. Something, the Harple woman thought, was not quite as it should be.
"Not value," Penelope said.
"Perhaps you tie the physical act more tightly to your ethical being than do I."
"Spiritual being,"
Catti Bree offered in correction. But Penelope would hear none of that.
"Not so," she said.
"No, I do not divorce the physical from the spiritual.
There is a not subtle difference between being adventurous and being wanton."
"Or is the difference merely a matter of how you wish others to perceive you?"
Catti Bree hadn't spoken the word sharply, but she might as well have followed her question with a slap across Penelope's face, as far as Penelope was concerned.
"Are you trying to save me?" Penelope shot back. "I told you once that my attitude on this subject was in no way a reflection of my own self-worth. I need no saving."
Catti Bree started to reply, but Penelope cut her short.
"And I'll hear none," she said. We are friends, and I wish to keep it that way.
Caterbury looked away. Penelope noted moisture rimming the bottom of her large eyes.
I do not judge you, Penelope said softly. As with whatever god we might choose, this is a personal choice. And if you're not harming anyone, then there is no right or wrong.
No, Caterbury said, spinning back. I cannot accept that, not with Drizzt.
She sucked in her breath and turned away again.
Not with Drizzt, Penelope said. And a thought hit her hard then.
Not with Drizzt going off to rescue Dahlia?
She was his lover, Caterbury mumbled.
After you had been dead for more than half a century, Penelope retorted before she took a moment to consider her response.
Was Caterbury jealous? It made no sense to her. She had known Caterbury as a sister those days in the Ivy Mansion. There was no basis for this, nor was it in any way in character for the strong, self-reliant, and purposeful woman.
I do not need you to remind me of my history, Caterbury said, seeming totally flustered and out of sorts.
Penelope couldn't begin to sort it out. But then, Penelope was not in the mind of Caterbury.
Where once more images of lovemaking with Gromf Beanri teased her and tempted her, and that in turn assaulted her every denial and chewed at the edges of her understanding of the very essence of her relationship with Drizzt.
You look troubled, my dear,
old Kipper Harple said to Penelope when she returned to the main tent in the Harple complex, which had been set up just over the bridge on Close Guard Isle. The woman walked over and slumped into the chair next to her uncle, and Kipper moved a hand across to massage her shoulder.
Something is not quite right, and I cannot yet distill it, Penelope admitted. Caterbury is quite in distress, I fear.
About the host tower?
Kipper asked. I believe the construction is going splendidly. We are far ahead of where I thought.
No, Penelope said. This is on a more personal level. Perhaps she fears for Drizzt.
He is going to Menzo Berenzon, so say the whispers, said Kipper. I fear for Drizzt.
Penelope looked over at him with all seriousness.
Well, perhaps she fears because of the elf woman Drizzt is going to rescue.
Kipper looked at her curiously for just a moment, before putting on a perfectly perplexed expression.
Drizzt? He asked incredulously. Is there a truer heart in all Faerun?
As I said, something is not quite right.
Now it was her turn to put an honest and sober look over Kipper.
And I fear it has more than a little to do with our host here in Luskan.
Jarl Axel? Benny Ago?
Our real host.
Oh, that one, Kipper said, assuming the exasperated expression that he always wore when Gromf Beanri was in the room or in the conversation.
Well, then, I fear that your concern is well placed.
She awakened drenched in sweat, her breath coming in short gasps. She didn't know whether to be terrified or wonderfully contented, and the wild disparity of the two offered no resolution. And she saw them still, the pale yellow eyes, just a hint of pink around the amber iris, like a simmering demonic presence hidden beneath the startling beauty of the mighty dark elf. Caterbury tried to calm herself, whispered reassurances, and even placed a hand over her fast-beating heart.
A dream? Was she alone? Had she been alone?
She forced herself to take a deep breath. It was too dark in her tent on this moonless night. She couldn't tell dreams from present reality. She reached her hand out tentatively across the bed, fearful that she might find someone sleeping there. When that dark thought proved unfounded, she moved her hand out to the small night table, thinking to reach the small lamp. Before she got her fingers to it, though, she found another item, one more comforting.
Guinevere. Oh, I need you, she whispered, Bringing the onyx figurine in close to her chest. A few heartbeats later, she felt the panther climb up beside her, then flop down with her back against Caterbury's leg, as if reading the woman's mind. The bed groaned under the weight of the great cat, but Caterbury didn't care. Even if it broke, she would lie there on the fallen mattress, safe with Gwen so close.
She reached down to ruffle the panther's fur, and the cat looked up to regard her. Even in the dim light, those feline eyes shined, and Catty Bree took great comfort for a moment. Then the image in her mind changed, the panther's eyes transforming into those pale yellow orbs that ruled Catty Bree's fevered night.